Thank you, Deborah. Au hea oko e ko ka aha. Inahe kuliana imua o kea aha ho o kolo kolo ki e ki e hano hano o ka moku aina o Hawaii. I naoi mai, i malio mai, i lohe ia ka leo. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye, all persons having any business before this Honorable Supreme Court of the State of Hawaii, draw nigh. Give your attention and you shall be heard.
Please call the case.
Case number SCWC 18755, State of Hawaii versus Ogdenoi. Arguing for the petitioner, William H. Jameson, Deputy Public Defender. Arguing for the respondent, Don Fluto, Deputy Prosecuting Attorney. Argument on the merits.
All right, good afternoon. Aloha, everyone. This proceeding is being broadcast live on the Judiciary's YouTube channel. During the proceeding, should a justice have a question, they'll raise their hand virtually and I'll call upon them at the earliest opportunity. I'd like to start today by asking our attorneys to introduce themselves in the order in which they'll be arguing.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chief Justice, members of the court. William Jameson, H. Jameson Jr. on behalf of the defendant, appellant, petitioner, Artemio Ogdenoi.
Oh, Mr. Fudo, we need to unmute you. Sorry about that.
Don Fudo on behalf of respondent, State of Hawaii, I apologize.
No problem. All right, just to confirm, Mr. Jameson, you have 30 minutes for your argument. You've asked to reserve 10 minutes for rebuttal, so we'll give you a warning 20 minutes in, and then, of course, at the end of your 30 minutes. Mr. Fudo, you have 30 minutes, and we will give you a warning with 10 minutes to go. And at the end of your light, and when the warning comes, there'll be a light and a tone that you'll see on the screen in here. Mr. Jameson, please proceed with your argument.
Thank you. May it please the court. We are before this court on this writ of certiorari because we contend that the ICA erred in concluding that the family court did not abuse its discretion when it sentenced Mr. Ogdenoi to DVI in addition to 181 days of the jail sentence of 181 days. The reason we make this assertion is because we believe that Section 586-4, the statute that Mr. Ogdenoi was found guilty under, the intent of the legislature under that statute was that DVI be a condition of probation. And since the court lost jurisdiction to impose probation when it imposed a sentence of greater than 6 months, i.e. 181 days, the court therefore could not sentence DVI because he could no longer make the DVI a condition of probation. Now, I know that the statute at issue 586-4E does not specifically say what I am saying. So before I get into why I believe that the statute does require that DVI only be imposed as a condition of probation, I'd like to go into a little bit of the facts of this case so we know how we arrived at where we are today. Back in September of 2018, September 4th of 2018, there was a calendar call in this case. Mr. Ogdenoi had been charged with a violation of a TRO under 586-4E. Prior and during the course of the proceedings, Mr. Ogdenoi's deputy public defender informed the court that the case was not going to proceed to trial because the state and the defense had reached a plea agreement in the case. The plea agreement in the case was that Mr. Ogdenoi had another pending TRO charge against him, in exchange for his willingness, agreement, I should say, to enter a no contest plea to the one count of violation of the TRO, the other pending count would be dismissed. And also, as part of the plea agreement, he would receive a sentence of 181 days. In other words, there would be no probation in the case. Now, after the court proceeded to take Mr. Agdino away, I should preface this by saying the court did inform defense counsel, and I think the record does reflect Mr. Agdinaway as well, that despite the plea agreement, the court felt the court was going to impose the DVI. And then the court went through the change of plea process, found that the change of Mr. Agdinaway knew what he was doing, essentially, and accepted his plea. Then court turned to the prosecutor in the case and asked the prosecutor what he was arguing for, and the prosecutor said on the record that you follow the plea agreement. Asked our public DPD in the case, deputy public defender in the case, what we were arguing for. And we likewise said that essentially follow the plea agreement, no probation, but credit for time served. And then the court proceeded to...
Mr. Davis, question from Justice Wilson. Justice Wilson.
Thank you, Chief Justice. Mr. Jameson, you are outlining a set of facts that I think establish a proposition that there doesn't seem to be any disagreement about, which is that your client was placed on a sentencing status that was not probation.
Exactly.
So assuming that to be the case, let me ask your help in your statutory interpretation that pertains to what appears to be a conflict, maybe in your view it's not, but appears to be a conflict between the sentence that's anticipated for 586-4 and also, as I know you've observed, 709-906, the abuse cases, a sentence that seems to anticipate that there will be treatment for domestic violence where there's a sentence. Whether it's a sentence for the violation of the TRO, as in this case, or a violation of 709-906 by the commission of an abuse case. So unless you have a reason to think there isn't a conflict, it appears that conflicts with 706-605 that just outlines three categories of sentencing, essentially, for judges, you know, the fine and the sentencing and the probation. So how would you suggest we reconcile that, knowing that there's this issue that the ICA has brought to our attention about DeMello, because DeMello didn't have that kind of statutory language that made it clear that there should be domestic violence treatment where there is a violation of either 586-4 or 709-906. So how do you reconcile the conflict? Sorry for the long question.
No, I think I understand it because I think I understand what the ICA did when they distinguished DeMello. It is correct, you know, under 705, what we usually turn to see what the judge's alternatives are for sentencing in criminal cases, and it does not list DVI. But what makes my case different from DeMello is also the harassment case statute in DeMello did not make provision for in DeMello anger management. The statute in my case, 586-4E, does make provision expressly for DVI. And so although the sentencing option is not in 705, it is in 586-4E. So that's why I think that although it's not one of the things that judges normally sentence someone to under 705, so how can they do it in my case? They can do it because it's in the specific statute he violated in this case, which is the violation of TRO 586-4E.
So it's your position that the circuit court was authorized to impose this additional condition beyond the open term or beyond the non-probationary sentence. It was authorized to require domestic violence training, treatment?
Not exactly. My position is under 586-4E, the circuit court was authorized to impose DVI. but only as a condition of probation, not the way it's like similar. It was not authorized, I think, to sentence him to a DVI without probation. That's my position. And since the court did not do that.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but is it your position that 586-4 and 709-906 limit to probation the imposition of DVI treatment? That's true under those statutes? Because it doesn't seem to say that. Those statutes don't seem to say that.
I know I said that at the outset, and that's the problem that I think that is before this. What I'm arguing is not in the statute. But if I could explain something to Your Honor, if you look at 709, the domestic violence abuse, the domestic abuse statute, okay, when you read it carefully, I believe that the statute specifically says that if the person is found guilty of abuse of a family or a household member, that the court shall, and this is what makes it, that's what makes it different from, I guess, this is what makes it different from 586-4E. Under 706, the statute clearly states that the court shall require someone convicted of the abuse of a family or a household member to undergo and complete DVI. And the statute goes on to say that the court shall set a POC, essentially, and at the POC, the defendant shall appear. And if it appears to the court that the defendant does not have good reason for not having completed the DVI, then the statute says then the court shall revoke his probation. So if you read it that way, right, obviously the court cannot. That statute would be meaningless unless he was on probation to begin with. So it doesn't expressly say that if the court sentences him, he has to be on probation before he can be given a DVI. But
Mr.
I think,
listen, if I could, Justice Nakayama and Justice McKenna have been waiting to ask a question. So if we could, let's let them go ahead and weigh in at this point.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. First off, Mr. Jamieson, I have a question, a factual question. You indicated that Judge Viola didn't go along with the plea agreement. But I'm looking at the transcript, and the judge says, does Mr. Agdinoy know that if he enters a no contest plea, which is not based on probation, I'm required by statute to order domestic violence intervention class and set a proof of compliance hearing, to which his attorney said, yes, he's aware. Is that the agreement with the state? The court asked, and the state said, yes, Your Honor. And the defense did not object to the court's sentence during the hearing. So why are you saying that it was in contravention of the plea agreement that the judge sentenced Mr. Agdinoy to the DVI courses?
I have to stand corrected because I now, upon careful reflection, I don't think that to have been the case. Because when I read, in preparation, I read the transcripts again in this case. When you look at the motion for reconsideration, it became clear at that motion for reconsideration, I think exactly what the plea agreement was in this case. The plea agreement essentially was this, that Mr. Agdinoy would plead no contest. The state would drop the pending, another pending TRO violation. And in exchange, he would get 181 days in jail. There was no express agreement, and shall not receive DVI. Good. So that was not part of any express agreement. At the motion for reconsideration, what my colleague seemed to have been arguing was that in the past, whenever the state and the public defender's office had entered into similar agreements, it was understood that there would be no DVI. But they did not, in my case, or in I think in those other cases either, ever expressly agree that there will be no DVI. So I cannot say that the court did in fact act in contravention of the plea agreement. I had misunderstood because I thought that part of the plea agreement was that expressly stated no DVI, but that turns out not to be the case.
All right. Mr. Jameson, we have a question from Justice McKenna and then Justice Edens. Justice McKenna.
Mr. Jameson, I agree. It appears that the judge did sentence pursuant to the plea agreement initially. And part of the plea agreement involved dismissal of another charge. So I'm a little bit confused as to the relief that you're requesting here. Are you requesting that the plea agreement be set aside since it involved an illegal sentence? And that we go back to square one? No. What are we saying here?
What we're saying is the portion of the plea agreement which we believe is legal should be enforced. That is, no probation, 181 days. But the portion of the sentence, I should say, where the court says that you must do DVI, not as a condition of probation, that should be set aside. That's what I'm asking for.
All right, thank you.
Justice Edens.
Mr. Jameson, you essentially tie the DVI to probation. And I wanted to ask you about probation. You know, in your lengthy experience with individuals who are placed on probation, interacting with the probation department, does a defendant who's placed on probation receive services from the adult client service branch and things, you know, to ensure success on probation, compliance with the terms in this particular situation, even funding for domestic violence intervention programs, guidance, instructions on how to comply with the program. And even if you didn't speak English, interpreter services that probation would facilitate an individual in complying with domestic violence intervention program?
In my experience, the answer would be yes, which is the problem in this case. If I may explain myself, you know, let us, just for the sake of argument, assume that we had not filed this motion for reconsideration. Mr. Agdinawai now, after he does his 181 days of imprisonment, when he is released from prison, he was not on probation. Because he was not on probation, when he walked out the doors, he had in front of him a piece of paper that said essentially to come to court on February 28th, just a couple of weeks, by the way, after he had been released from incarceration. And then he was supposed to have by then completed, he should have completed DVI treatment, counseling. Now, if you look at it from Mr. Agdinawai's point of view, this order that he had to read was somewhat unclear because it did not exactly tell him where to go or what to do, okay? Now, had he been placed on probation, you know the term with the court would have ordered him to report to his probation officer. When that was the case, I'm sure that I'm visualizing this is what would happen. Mr. Agdinawai would go and see his probation officer and say, look, I don't understand what this thing means here about undergo domestic violence intervention at any authorized domestic violence program. I don't know what that means, but I think what the probation officer would have likely done is, don't worry about it, because I know what that means. And in fact, I've got it kind of set up for you, but you're not going to start until maybe next week or so. So when you go to court, you tell the judge that you're currently in the program. You're going to need more time. Tell them that, you know, that's what we have set up. And the judge is going to give you more time. And also, Mr. Agdinawai, this you do, okay? You make sure you finish that program, because if you do, I will tell the court you did, and you won't have to come to court anymore, okay? So Mr. Agdinawai would then have guidance in exactly what to do. Now, it is my view that that is what the legislature anticipated would be the best way of accomplishing its goal of, you know, dealing with the problem of domestic violence.
Mr. Jameson, let me interject one thing here. Now, the amended judgment did say or instruct Mr. Dunaway, or you are to do any other DVI program approved by the Adult Client Service Branch of the First Circuit. In your experience, if somebody is not on probation, would the Adult Client Service Branch have any interaction whatsoever with that defendant?
No. Why would they? because there's no probation. You know, they're not obligated to. I don't see any reason they would have any interaction with the defendant. It's not to say the defendant couldn't call if he even knew what that meant, what the adult client services branch meant, especially in Mr. Agdinoway's court case, which I you know, he had just gotten out of jail. He didn't have a house. I probably had no money, no phone.
So can I ask one more question following my original? Does the adult client service branch aid indigent individuals or individuals who do not speak English? In other words, with the DVI programs, help with interpreters, help with funding?
That's beyond my experience. I have to honestly say, I cannot answer that for sure. I'm sorry, but that's the answer.
Justice Wilson has a question. I did want to ask one question because I want to be sure I understand your position. Is it your position that the court cannot sentence someone both to the maximum jail term of 1 year in prison and DVI? And how do you reconcile that? If you look at the legislative history, you know, the legislature indicates, you know, a sort of over the years, an increased awareness of the significance of these offenses, a view that there should be significant penal sanctions, including mandatory minimum sentences, and a real recognition of the importance of DVI. How can you reconcile that legislative history with what I think your position is, which is a judge has to pick between being able to sentence someone to more than 180 days or sentence them to DVI as a condition of probation? How can you reconcile that?
I think I understand what you're saying, you know, because as I started out, the legislature is wrestling with the problem of domestic violence, and the way the legislature has determined to deal with this problem, other than only imprisonment, is through education and counseling, and that is best done through DVI. Now, how can I reconcile it with my argument before you that once given the maximum term, you know, we cannot give DVI anymore? I'd explain it this way. I think you've got to look at 906. I think it's unavoidable, 709-906. And it does have to do with what Justice Edens was asking me about earlier. In order to accomplish this goal of dealing with domestic violence through counseling and training, we want the person to go, obviously, to counseling and training. Now, if you're not on probation, the only way to accomplish that goal, let's say you gave them the maximum term, is what? It has to be accomplished, therefore, through POCs and through the contempt statute, realistically, right? Because he's no longer on probation. So what does that mean in terms of real life? It means if the court could have the power to give him the maximum sentence and then say, in addition, you shall go and complete a DVI, the court is going to give him time, obviously, to do that. Usually it's a long time. DVI classes, in my experience, are about a year, and the problem is getting into class. There's always a long waiting list. Now, let's say that the defendant comes back in a year, and he tells the judge, I did not do it, and he gives the judge a good excuse. You know, and the judge says, I'm not going to use the contempt statute, but you haven't done it, so I'll give you another year. So the defendant comes back in another year, and again, he has a good excuse. And the judge says, okay, I'm not going to use the contempt statute against you, but I'll give you another year. This can go on forever. And then the person may be years before the person sees the inside of the DVI classroom. Now, we don't want that to happen. We want the person to get into the DVI classroom as soon as possible. And the best way to accomplish that goal is with the assistance of the adult client services branch. So that's why I don't think the legislature would like someone who has who is not on probation to be sentenced to DVI, because that leaves you only POCs and the contempt statute as a means of enforcing it, and that is a very unwieldy, problematic way, and ineffective way many times of accomplishing the legislature's goal. That's why I say that.
Thank you. A question from Justice Wilson, followed by Justice Nakayama. Justice Wilson.
Thank you, CJ. Mr. Jameson, you just outlined why you don't think the legislature would like to have DV treatment be a condition along with a non-probationary sentence of incarceration. Okay, well, let's assume that the legislature intended what one might say seems to be the purpose of 709-906 when you look at language that, for example, says that there has to be domestic violence. This is section 7. Whenever a court sentences a person or grants a motion for deferral pursuant to sections 5 and 6. Now, sections 5 and 6 refer to mandatory minimums. So this section is saying that where the court sentences a mandatory minimum, and of course, in that case, it could well be a sentence that doesn't include probation. It says the court shall require the offender to complete within a specified time frame any available domestic violence intervention programs. So let's assume that the legislature intended what that seems to say to happen. This awkward situation where you have a person that's not on probation that's given this condition. Assuming that, and I know so far I don't think you have, what would be the position of our court? How should we address that in light of section 706-605 that sets out three categories for sentencing, right? Fines, probation, and imprisonment.
Could I ask, you know, I'm not quite sure what you're asking me. I'm sorry.
Well, I'm asking you to tell us if there's a way that you can resolve what seems to be a potential conflict between a statute that says the court, this is the 706-605, the court has three options for sentencing, either a fine, jail, or probation. If that's the case, and then you have another set of statutes, which I've just referred to, that say, wait, that there actually is another category mm-hmm. of sentencing that would namely be domestic violence treatment mm-hmm. that's available in addition to those three. How do you think we should reconcile it?
Well, generally, I think we reconcile it by the fact that there is an obvious conflict. It appears to be a conflict because it's not in 705. And I think there's another statute that says, you know, really that the criminal law of sentencing should be under the penal code, and the penal code does not require DVI. Okay. But when there is a
I think 709-906 is part of the penal code.
Oh, I'm sorry, it is actually 709. I was thinking of 584, which is my case. Mine is a 584 case, a 586-4E case. Not 706, I stand corrected, of course, part of the penal code. Well, I don't see that much of a problem, because in a case that involves the conviction of an abuse, the law says that in that case, the court shall sentence the person to DVI. So it's like we recognize that the code said the 705 says something else, but for this specific situation, the legislature would like this specific sentence added to what's in 706-605, because this is the way the legislature has determined to deal with the problem of domestic violence. But I do want to say something further about 706-605 and the statute that's before that Mr. Agdinawai was convicted of. And it does bear on what we're talking about. You know, Judge Viola, in the end, felt like the ICA that he was required to impose DVI once the person was convicted. I know, I have to say, I disagree with that, because if you read 706, I mean, I'm sorry, yeah, if you read 706-609, it says in clear language that the court shall require the person to complete the DVI. If you read 586-4E, the TRO violation statute, it has no such language, the court shall require the person to complete DVI. It says the defendant shall undergo, you know, DVI intervention, et cetera. as ordered by the court. In other words, under 706-609, the court's hands are tied when it comes to DVI. You know, the court has to do it. Under my statute, Section 586-4E, the court's hands are not tied. And I think for good reason, because unlike a spouse abuse, I mean, domestic abuse situation, a TRO can be obtained without any violence involved and can be violated without any violence involved. And a situation like that, why would you want to shackle the court and not give the court to fashion an appropriate sentence? So I do want to say that I don't think that Judge Viola was required to impose DVI just because Mr. Agdinawai was convicted of the statute. He had some discretion. Now, so I think that was worth noting. So because that's part of what he did, why he did in this case.
Mr. Jamieson, we're getting towards the end of your time. Justice Nakayama, I saw you had a question. Did you want to raise it now or wait at this point?
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. Mr. Jamieson answered it in a subsequent answer.
Very well. Mr. Jamieson, shall we move on to Mr. Fudo and then come back to you for your rebuttal or anything else you wanted to raise at this time?
No, I will reserve for my rebuttal. Thank you.
All right. Mr. Fudo, your argument. Oh, you're going to have to unmute, Mr. Fudo. Sorry about that.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, we are here today because the legislature has determined that domestic violence is one of the most serious problems affecting our community. Stories are regularly reported in the media, and unfortunately, sometime the end is with the death of a loved one. This court, in collaboration with other partners, has recognized that ending intimate partner violence requires a change in attitudes, belief systems, and behavior on the part of the offender and the community. And what I'm referring right now is to the Hawaii Batter Intervention Program standards, of which this court was a part. I believe it was in 2010. With that said, the legislature clearly believed, and consistent with the Batter Intervention Program standards, that a step to effectuate the goal of addressing this serious problem in our community, domestic violence intervention. I welcome the court's questions.
So, how do you respond? Oh, I think I'm unmuted. How do you respond to the argument that the legislature was looking for effective solutions and that DVI without probation is not effective? What's your response that we should looking at the overall structure of these statutes, in this case, having DVI without it being a condition of probation is unlikely to provide an effective remedy, and that would help us inform our understanding of the legislature's intent? That's what's your response to that argument? And then I have several other folks who have questions after me.
My response would be that the legislature did not in any fashion provide any text, nor has my colleague cited any text that would support that. To the extent that there is any question, as you pointed out, Your Honor, the legislature was very clear. Mandatory domestic violence intervention. It did not condition it on probation. It did not condition it on anything other than a conviction in this situation for violating a temporary restraining order, which is serious in and of itself, as the legislature has noted. Just, if I could have just one second. In Act 72, 1998, where they made domestic violence intervention mandatory, they also noted, they being the legislator, that, that it was serious in and of itself because the matter is rendered in conjunction with residents who seek protection through the judicial system. So these people, and according to the Hawaii Battery Intervention Bureau, which I'm going to refer to it as HIBIPS, they predominantly characterize the offender as male. I don't disagree with that. But for these females and children that need this protection, they rely on the courts. So contrary to what I've heard, it is a very serious matter. Furthermore, under 586.4, the ex parte order is predicated on a showing that there's probable cause to believe a past act or acts of abuse have occurred, or that threats of abuse make it probable that acts of abuse may be imminent. Rather significant.
Questions from Justice McKenna and then Justice Edens. Justice McKenna.
Thank you, Chief Justice. Mr. Fudo, here's where I'm having difficulty. HRS 701-102 subsection 3 says the provisions of chapters 701 through 706 of the code are applicable to offenses defined by other statutes unless the code otherwise provides. And then, as Justice Wilson has pointed out, 706.605, which is now applicable to 586-4, pursuant to 701.102 subsection 3, 706.605 says the court, except as provided, and there's no exception that applies here, the court may sentence a convicted defendant to one or more of the following dispositions. First is probation, second is fine, third is imprisonment, and fourth is community service. But it's or. And the statutes go on to say that subsection 2 of 706.605 goes on to say that the court shall not sentence a defendant to probation and imprisonment except as authorized by Part 2. And Part 2, 706.624, subsection 2A, says that for a misdemeanor, you cannot sentence someone to probation and imprisonment if the imprisonment exceeds 6 months. So it seems to me that in terms of reconciling the legislature's desire or mandate, if it is a mandate under 586-4, to require domestic violence batterers intervention, it's pretty easy because under 706-623, when I sat on this calendar, I think probation wasn't six, I think it was like 1 year, but it's now 2 years. And so you can sentence a defendant to probation for up to 2 years with up to 6 months imprisonment with DVI. But the statutes, as I read them, do not allow 181 days plus probation. So how do you reconcile that?
Okay. I'm not actually certain, and I apologize. I understand your question, but let me finish. If there's a conflict between a general statute and a specific, as I believe you noted in State versus Kasugabadiag, of an opinion you authored, the specific controls. If it didn't, the DUI statute with its penalty provisions, gone. 586.4, gone. 586.10, gone. It's the legislator's prerogative. And this court has regularly said, conflict between specific and general, specific controls. That's what you authored, Your Honor. So to the extent the specific statute is 586.4, with a very comprehensive attempt by the legislator to address the serious problem of domestic violence, you look there.
Kasugabadiag, I believe, involved the youthful offender statute, which I can't remember what statute it was. But how do you, Kasugai Badian was also consistent with the rule of lenity. It, the decision favored the defendant because if there's a conflict, the rule of lenity applies. Here we have a pretty clear statute that says the legislature says that 706 applies to 586 offenses. And the court, what's confusing to me is the result, the desired result could have been achieved if the court had sentenced the defendant to 2 years probation with with up to 6 months imprisonment with DVI. That would have been a legal sentence. But it appears fairly clear that once the court said 181 days, it became you couldn't do that.
Your Honor, I'm not certain why there is the notion that it couldn't be done. If I'm allowed to finish, the court could sentence the individual to the mandatory 2 days, which it must, as well as the DVI, and let's just use the figure 181 days. So what a forward-thinking court could do is to stay the imposition of the jail sentence and have the individual first undergo DVI as the legislature intended. Furthermore, in the statute, there is a reward for not just undergoing it, but if the individual completes it, then the court could suspend any jail sentence. So not just incident to probation, not just incident to anything specific, but any jail sentence. Rather compelling language. Furthermore, 586.4 also the legislature's forward thinking and ability to mesh statutes together is also evinced by the following sentence, quote, "Nothing in this section shall be construed as limiting the discretion of the judge to impose additional sanctions authorized in sentencing for a misdemeanor," close quote. That would be 1 year jail. So it's very easy to conceive of a situation, as I just proposed. According to the Hawaii Batter Intervention Program standards, it takes 24 weeks to complete the program. Well, if he didn't complete it in 24 weeks, he could come to court on motion of his defense counsel, who should be guiding him through this process since the sentence isn't completed, and therefore ask the court for a little more time.
We have a question from Justice Edens. Justice Edens.
Mr. Fuda, you mentioned controlling statutes. And when I look at sentencing, in Chapter 706, I see right off the bat at 706-600, the statute reading, "No sentence shall be imposed otherwise than in accordance with this chapter." And the only place I see in Chapter 706 where imposition of DVI is authorized is under 706-624-2J, which talks about mental health treatment. And in 706-624, it says that may be imposed as a condition of a sentence of probation. So doesn't it make sense that the legislature decided to choose to allow DVI only as a condition of probation?
Respectfully, no, primarily because they didn't put that in the text. If they wanted that specific of a limitation, one would certainly suppose that they would have included it in the text, because they also mentioned probation in other aspects of the text. So to think that they just forgot it and wanted to limit it to probation, there's no textual support for that. Furthermore, there is no legislative history for that. And on that, I would note that, as this court said in Freitas, you know, quote, "The function of the legislature is primary. Its exercise fortified by presumptions of right and legality, and is not to be interfered with lightly, nor by any judicial conception of its wisdom or propriety." period. As former Judge Akoba noted in Coyle versus Compton, the legislator enacted Chapter 586 to streamline the procedures for obtaining and issuing ex parte restraining orders to prevent acts of or the reoccurrence of domestic violence.
Let me ask you, intervention
is a step to effectuate that aspirational goal.
Let's talk about the aspirational goal there. You know, what's your understanding as to why the felony abuse law under 709-906 subsection 9, that's the impeding the breathing, or 709-906 subsection 10, which is domestic violence committed in presence of a minor. Why do those statutes omit domestic violence intervention as a requirement? And 586-4, a misdemeanor TRO type of violation, require it. What's your understanding as to that? Some seems like a disconnect to me.
Justice Evans, I won't fight the hypothetical, but before I answer, I would note this. In an opinion, I'll say recently authored by yourself, quote, issues not properly raised on appeal will be deemed to be waived, close quote. Let me stop you there. In addition, I understand that there's a proposed amendment to Rule 28. So where the court is considering plain error, the parties would have notice. So if you're asking me just my personal opinion, since I didn't read those two statutes, I think it would be a misstep for me to attempt any informed opinion.
Well, let me ask you this. Is on a felony abuse, there's a couple options. On a felony abuse, you can sentence the individual to an indeterminate term of incarceration, right? And if that happened, is it your position that person can also be sentenced to a DVI component as well?
Since you know the statute obviously better than I, does the statute provide for that? If the answer is no, then my answer is no.
Okay. And that's why, and the other option possibly on a felony abuse would be under 706-624 to apply as a condition of probation. Again, the only place in Chapter 706 where you could impose a DVI condition, that would seem to be the logical. I mean, what judge would not impose on a felony abuse a condition of DVI is, I guess, what I'm saying, and that's my point.
I guess my point would be, Your Honor, that if a judge in a felony domestic abuse gave the individual, I think, what are we talking about, the open five? He's pretty scandalous.
Okay. Now, let me tell you this. Is oftentimes also there's multiple crimes charged. For example, maybe you got a burglary, you got some other crimes along with maybe a TRO violation. When a person receives an indeterminate term of incarceration in that situation, does the judge also, if there is that misdemeanor, have to impose DVI?
That's a good question. And I wish I had known that you were going to ask that before I came to court, because I would have been prepared.
Okay. I'll provide my questions to you beforehand next time. Thank you, Mr. Fudo.
Thank you, Justice Evans.
Justice Nakayama. Oh, I'm sorry. Justice Nakayama.
Thank you, Chief Justice. You got quite a concession from Justice Evans there, Mr. Fudo. Mr. Fudo, I am going to ask you about something that you yourself brought up, and that is, if we were to say that a condition such as DVI needed to be a term and condition of probation, what about the other serious problem that you mentioned before that the legislature has brought up, and that is drunk driving? Because presently drunk driving requires to take remedial courses on drunk driving, and probation is not allowed. So would that be consistent?
Well, I think the way the legislature handles one offense is not necessarily indicative of how they must handle another. And with respect to felonies and misdemeanors, which this is, I can see a world of difference and a bright light between the two that would make the legislature's desire to treat them differently, especially in a 586-4 situation where you're dealing with families. The judge should have the discretion when he sees a family situation where the gentleman is genuinely apologetic and the family are supportive of him, to give him the 81 days, stay that sentence on condition that he does the DVI first. With that said, it would make even less sense where my colleague was saying it could go on forever. You put the person on probation for 2 years, give him 180 days jail, which you can, you would have that same revolving door with probation, probation, probation. So to me, that's specious. I think this case calls for statutory construction. If it's ambiguous, you try and ascertain the intent of the legislature, as Justice McKenna recently said in M-I-L-N-E. And I think we should also give the family courts the credit this court did in that same case, quote, family court judges are knowledgeable about and receive specialized training on various issues and concerns arising out of domestic violence, close quote. The discretion to fashion a sentence for a particular family circumstance while also protecting the individual that got the ex parte order is paramount. To effectuate the change in attitudes and culture, 2 days jail might not necessarily do it. But the Hawaii Batterer Intervention Program standards, having this individual commit to the program 24 weeks, we can see the sincerity. We can see the genuine remorse for what he did and the family's desire for the family to remain together. We should not frustrate that by adding conditions that the text doesn't support.
Mr. Fudo, Justice Wilson has a question. I did have one I wanted to ask first. Could you respond to Mr. Jameson's argument that in reading the statute at issue here, we should look at 709-906, which he says reflects in the text the view or can be interpreted as supporting the view that probation is required in order to impose DVI. So if I understand correctly, he's saying we should read these statutes in peri materia. That statute is more explicit and we should use that as guidance in interpreting 586-4. What would your response be to that argument?
Respectfully, I wholly disagree. If any statutes need to be read in peri materia, it would be as the legislator noted in 586-4. It would be 586-4 and any sanctions available for misdemeanors. Going off into another situation where it also contemplates a felony, I'm just not understanding which part of statutory construction that analysis could fit.
Very well. Justice Wilson, your question.
Thank you, CJ. Mr. Fudo, I wanted to get your clarification about what I think is your statutory interpretation with respect to 706-605 and 586-4. Specifically, it's your view that 586-4 represents a clear legislative intent that domestic violence treatment, or DVI, be required whenever there is a conviction under that statute. And while it does seem to conflict with the language in 706-605 that lays out certain sentencing options for a judge, conflicts in the sense that it seems to be an additional category, in your view, that is a conflict that is resolved in favor of the intent in 586-4? Is that correct?
No, that's not correct. My simple contention, as Justice McKenna noted in her opinion, and I believe also Kamenau, specific statutes control over general statutes. this couldn't be any more specific.
Well, that's what I thought I was seeking your clarification about. Your view is that there is a conflict.
No, but I don't think there is a conflict, Your Honor. I do not think there is a conflict.
But if you're saying that a specific statute controls over a general statute, doesn't that imply kind of a conflict between the specific statute and the general statute?
No, that proposition works if there is. I am not conceding there's any conflict. I cannot believe a sentient...
Well, help me with that. Why isn't there a conflict if you've got an intent expressed in 586-4 that there be a sentence that's separate from probation, but it doesn't seem to be provided for in 706-605? You seem to be suggesting that I'm not really understanding 706-605, so help me with that.
Well, I don't know why you're not understanding it, but all I can say is the legislature...
Well, go ahead. I'm interested in your thoughts. Why isn't there a conflict?
Well, because I wouldn't go to that general statute.
Mr. Fudo, if I could interrupt, I would ask, please, you know, do be respectful of the court and not personalize your comments with regard to the justices, if you would, please.
Your Honor, I don't understand that. I was not personalizing anything to Justice Wilson. I don't know why he doesn't understand.
Well, Mr. Fudo, I'm speaking. I'm the presiding judge in this courtroom. I ask you to respect that. I'm simply asking, Mr. Fudo, there have been times in your argument today where your comments have struck me as personal with regard to your interactions with those justices. I ask that you avoid that and just argue the law. I think that's a simple enough admonition. Please follow it and continue your argument, okay?
I understand.
Please carry on.
So, Mr. Fudo, tell me why your view is that there is no need to consider, I think you were saying 706-605. I thought that's what you were leading up to.
Because the violation was under 586-4. 586-4 and the legislature's prerogative and their reasoned opinion has a very comprehensive set of sentencing provisions to address the problem of domestic violence. It's no different than DUI. Very specific sentencing requirements for DUI, they're set forth in the statute. So,
all right. Now, Justice McKenna has pointed out that 701-102 makes applicable to 586 the provisions of 706-605. So I take it you don't agree with that.
I don't know how to answer that. I mean, all I can say is what the law says. A legal argument. It's not for me to agree or disagree. I come prepared to the court to address the law. So,
well,
my personal opinions usually...
Do you agree with that legal analysis that 701-102 makes applicable the language in the penal code, specifically 706-605, makes it applicable to 586-4?
Okay. Justice Wilson, I don't want to be disrespectful. I just don't understand your question. But that's me. I'm sorry. I just don't understand the question.
Well, 701-102 says that the provisions of 706-605, essentially the provisions of the penal code, also apply to other criminal statutes outside the penal code, and 586-4 is one of them. That's all. That's the proposition. And so it sounds like you don't agree with that. You don't agree that 706-605 sentencing provisions apply to 586.
I would say that the legislature gave the court the discretion to impose, quote, additional sanctions authorizing in sentencing for a misdemeanor, close quote. I really hope that answers the question. I'm not trying to fight your hypothetical.
Okay.
Justice McKenna has a question, Mr. Fudo.
Mr. Fudo, I think you referenced the act in 1998, but you know, the legislature made it clear in 1998 that probation could be 2 years for a 586-4 violation as well as a 709-906 violation. So why does that not indicate legislative intent to that the legislature intended to allow probation and conditions of probation for 586-4 violations, including domestic violence batterers intervention, which, as you indicate, takes at least 24 months from beginning to end? So it takes 24 weeks beginning to end. So if it takes 24 weeks beginning to end and someone receives a 1 year probation with 6 months incarceration, it's basically impossible to complete the additional 24 weeks within the remaining time of probation. And it appears that's why the legislature changed the law 706-623 in 1998 to say that you can have 2 years probation for a domestic violence conviction, a misdemeanor domestic violence conviction, including 586-4. So even if 586-4 doesn't refer to probation, doesn't it seem pretty clear that the legislature actually intended to allow and authorize probation, including domestic violence intervention, for a 586-4 violation?
Again, I'm not trying to fight your hypothetical, but I don't believe it's necessary to delve into what they thought or intended. The text is clear. So there's no interpretation needed. They said under this particular statute, this particular paradigm, 2 years probation. So I just don't know how to the necessity to do anything other than, if I could just have a second. As you stated in Ba Diang, the court's foremost obligation in construing a statute is to ascertain and give effect to the intention of the legislature, which is to be obtained primarily from the statute itself. So they said 2 year probation. I'm not really certain then legally what analysis is needed beyond the plain text of the statute, but I don't want to be disrespectful. I just don't understand.
Thank you.
Mr. Fudo, we've come to the end of your time, but I want to give you an opportunity to wrap up or make any final arguments to the court at this point.
Perhaps domestic violence is an issue more personal to myself than for others, and hopefully that might explain some of my emotions. But I agree with the legislature. Locking every offender up is not going to do it in every case. And I believe their wisdom, as well as the courts, in mandating domestic violence intervention is a step in the right direction to address the societal problem. Many more steps are needed. And I just don't believe this case presents a reason in law to retreat from this path. Thank you. And again, I apologize to you, Mr. Chief Justice. I apologize to the other justices I offended. Thank you, Justice Edens, for in the future giving me the heads up to the extent there will be a future. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fudo, and the court appreciates your zealous advocacy, and thank you for your apology, and thank you very much for your advocacy today. We'll hear now from Mr. Jameson.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. I would like to respond to Mr. Fudo's argument in the following way. First, with respect to Justice Wilson's comment, question which actually helped me understand the issues in this case even better. Yes, I do believe that there is a conflict between 586-4E and 705, because since 705, the Penal Code does apply to 586-4E, and under the 586-4E, what it does, it creates an additional category that is not present in 705, the sentencing options. And I think I understand a little better why one of the ways to resolve that conflict, connecting to with Justice Edens, I think, if I understand correctly, maybe it wasn't Justice Edens, but I think the way to resolve the conflict is to say, okay, if you want DVI, you know, and to be without creating an additional category, simply make it a condition of probation, which most judges do anyway. That resolves that conflict. Now, responding to Justice McKenna, I think that the two-year...
Mr. Jameson, we have a question from Justice Edens.
Mr. Jameson, there's been talk about what could possibly happen to your client if he didn't do the DVI. And I've heard contempt thrown out there. Now, there's an ICA decision from 2009 called Asuncion, and it basically stated that contempt is not available as a sanction for a violation of probation. And that makes sense because theoretically, say the judge came in on contempt and gave him a year there. He would have served a year plus 181, which would be well in excess of the statutory max for the underlying offense. So I don't see contempt as being any type of consequence to this particular sentence. What could happen if that is indeed the case? Is there any stick to having your client do this program after he gets out of jail?
If I understand Asuncion, I think in Asuncion, the defendant was sentenced to probation for a custodial interference conviction. And among the terms of probation that was imposed upon Mr. Asuncion is that he stay away from AV, the minor in the case. And it was pretty good evidence he violated those conditions of probation. However, in Asuncion, the term of probation had expired. Now, the state when the probation was running made no move to remove, to have the probation revoked. And then have him sanctioned for violating the term, the condition that he stay away from AV, the minor. What the state instead did was, after probation had expired, is within the statutory time limit of the contempt statute, the 710 statute of 2 years, now charge him, after probation had expired, now charge him with contempt of court because he had violated the court's condition. If I understand Asuncion correctly, one of the reasons the ICA reversed the case was because they held that 7010, the terms of 7010 must be strictly construed, and that the terms of the allegation that the Mr. Asuncion had knowingly violated mandate, injunction or a process had to be strictly construed. And then looking at the term of probation at issue in this case, it said that was not a mandate of any, that was not a court order. And if I understand the ICA, they said in probation, okay, the idea here is that it's sort of an agreement between the court and the defendant. And that agreement is I have some power, I can put you in jail for a year, but I won't do that. On condition you keep your end of the deal, because I think I'd like to leave you out there. But if you don't, what I will do under this agreement is I will revoke your probation and impose the maximum. The agreement is not, I will revoke it and in addition charge you with contempt of court. That's why it's not a court order. You know, so that was the thing about Assumption. And the thing about Assumption that's important too is the term of probation had expired. You know, so they should have done it when this thing was in effect. But to get back to your question, you're asking me, what happens to the client? And I think it's in this context. If probation is not imposed, is that what you're asking me? If DVI is not part of probation, how do they enforce it? I think the way they would enforce it is what I was talking about earlier. The court would resort to the contempt statute. And in other words, the court, if it imposes DVI not subject to probation, would tell the person to come back on date certain. And if the court determines that the person has not complied, then the court would refer the matter for prosecution for contempt of court. Now, under Assumption, apparently that's not a problem because the person's not on probation, never was on probation. So that's why I think they could use contempt as a sanction. And then I say, it raises
in that situation, Mr. Jameson, couldn't the person then for this 586-4 case that doesn't do it, you get a contempt. All right, I'm going to order you to go away for 180 days, but you also got to do DVI. He doesn't do it again. And this person for the rest of his life conceivably is coming into court for a 586-4 violation. That would be the logical extreme, right? Which doesn't make much sense.
No, this is a strange world we live in, but there are some people who just don't get it. Now, the other thing that's also one thing that could happen when someone is not on probation, you might have somebody who's so hard-headed, he doesn't have a good excuse. He comes back and he gets the 30 days because he didn't have a good excuse. He keeps coming back time after time after time. By the time you add up all the time he did on contempt, he got more time than he would have gotten at the outset, a year in jail. He spent more than a year in jail for contempt. For what crime exactly is there that says you can do more than a year other than a felony? And they say what a felony is. What is this crime that he is getting at more than a year for? Well, it's contempt over and over and over and over. And then I'd like to add something else. Some guys might finally get it through their thick skulls. I'm sorry to be so graphic, but okay, I get it. I'm going to go. But why is he in? Now it's years after he should have gone in the first place, but he's not there to learn. He's not there to absorb the lessons and change and accomplish what the legislature wants to accomplish, i.e. change your behavior. Don't do this again. Make it better for everybody. Let's solve this problem. He's there because he doesn't want to go to jail again. He's there because let's get it over with and let me go about my life. That's why you should not use you should use probation. And in respect to what Justice McKenna had been saying, and I'd like to say something to what my colleague had alluded to, that my argument that this can go on forever is a species, because you can do the same thing can happen on probation. Well, at least you modify the statute because it's a recognition. It's going to take more than a year, possibly, because the program itself might be 6 months, but it's waiting to get into the program. That's the problem. But at least there's an end in sight, you know. Without probation, there is no end in sight if you must, as I believe the court can, because Assumption, again, comes into play. This is a court mandate. He wasn't on probation. So we can now use contempt and POCs. And this can go on way beyond a situation where the person is on probation. And in closing, I'd like to say, you know, I agree with you.
Mr. Jane, we have a question from Justice Nakayama, and then you can wrap up at that point. Justice Nakayama.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. Mr. Jameson, of course, I'm just guessing, but I think the reason why your client agreed to 181 days in jail, one day more than 6 months, is to avoid probation. But what's to prevent, understanding that the legislature really wants offenders to have DVI training, which is why they made it mandatory in 586-4, why can't this case go back to the trial judge and the trial judge sentence your client to 180 days in jail and then DVI, either freestanding or as a term, if you say it has to be under the term and condition of probation, as a term and condition of probation?
You're saying that we'll see you, the Supreme Court, we will, you know, send this case back to the to Justice Viola or the judge in this case, and have him resentenced to 6 months so that we don't have this problem, right?
No,
and then
he'd be. I'm not saying we'd ever tell them. I mean, why can't a judge do that? Your client apparently wanted to avoid the supervision of probation, which is why he wanted to go, I'm just guessing here, for 181 days instead of 180. But if I understand that your argument here is he doesn't want to do DVI, but we understand that the legislature, and I think you acknowledge and agree with Mr. Fudo, that this is a serious problem. The legislature wants to look at different ways to confront, and DVI is certainly an important tool. Why can't a trial judge, upon remand, sentence your client to 180, put him on probation, and then DVI is a term and condition of probation?
Because he's on probation. The judge can do that. Okay. He can give him 180 days because now he can impose probation. He only cannot impose probation because it's 181 days.
Okay.
So he certainly can.
I understand your argument is he just doesn't want to do DVI, but the judge can do that. If it's 180 days, you agree?
I do agree with that because the law says so, you know. But I don't know if I can say he doesn't want to do DVI. When I reviewed the transcript of the reconsideration, what had come out in the discussions among the court and the prosecutor and the defense counsel in the case was apparently, and the state was in agreement with this, I do believe, that they could see that there was going to be a revocation of probation, even if he was on probation, because this man was houseless. He had some language problems, money problems, and they didn't want to have him, you know, they didn't want to deal with this guy, have him get sentenced for a revocation. It was coming. And now that's with probation, okay? So to avoid that circumstance, the agreement was, look, let's give him a substantial period of time in jail.
I understand.
And then that way he won't come back. But it's not so much he doesn't want to do.
No, I'm sorry. I meant to say you are arguing that there shouldn't be any DVI also.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yes.
All right. I understand. Thank you.
Okay.
Jameson, anything to wrap up at this time?
Yes, I'd like to thank the court. And Mr. Chief Justice, what you had stated earlier was my position. What we are trying to determine here is this. This is a very serious problem, this domestic violence problem in this and all communities across the country. The legislature has said that another effective way to deal with this is through they really want DVI classes. But they want the classes to work as well is what I am saying. That if you do not make this a condition of probation, then you cannot achieve that purpose. And the reason I say we can determine here that the legislature intended this to be part of probation is because what I am arguing is what you had stated earlier. We can determine that, not every time, but in this case, we can determine it by reading 706, 609, and 586, 4E in pari materia. Because then it gives us, I would say, what the legislature is trying to do and how they're trying to do it. And I'm simply saying that the legislature really wants DVI to work. And in order for it to make it work, they want it to be done through probation, because probation is a far more effective mechanism for making this work than POCs in conjunction with contempt of court. So, and with that, I would thank the court and thank Mr. Fudo as well. Thank you.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Fudo. Thank you, Mr. Jameson, for your arguments today. The court will take this matter under advisement.
Ua ho'oku'u ia mai ne, kea aha ho'okolokolo ke'e'ke hanohano o ka moku aina o Hawaii. This Honorable Supreme Court of the State of Hawaii is now adjourned. Stop recording. Also.